to everybody who is attending the City of Tukwila Transportation and Infrastructure Services Committee meeting. I'm Tosh Sharp, joined by Councilmember Kruler, Councilmember Mohammed Abdi. We have we have six items on the agenda, but I just want to start with mentioning that item E is being pulled by the administration. There's some things that need to be reviewed, so it'll be down to five. We'll start with business agenda item. Let me go back to Monday, November 6th, 2023, 5:30 p.m.
Okay.
5:31 p.m. What's that?
I'm letting you restart, but I think we need to make a motion to amend the agenda.
Oh, okay. So the administration is asking that item E be pulled. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Okay. Perfect.
Yes.
And
that's a yes on my
second.
Perfect. Second.
Okay.
Sounds good. So item E is gone. So we will start with item A, which is PW, Public Works Operations Campus Phase 2 update by Mr. Miles. After the talk, the idea would be to forward this to the 11-13 committee of the whole meeting. Please.
Great, thank you. Committee, we've got a lot of people here. We'll get to do some introductions, but in the spring, the council gave us authorization to move through to design and pre-construction of the Public Works Phase 2 site. We have been working on that with the goal of coming back to you in December of this year with a schematic design and some new cost estimates based upon, you know, being at 30% design. I say new, but just cost estimates at the 30% design. Jerry Irvis is back here. She's with BN Builders. We went through our GCCM contractor selection process, which is what we're using for the project. If the name BM Builders means reminds you of anything, they built our Justice Center. So we had about 11 contractors who submitted for GCCM construction. We went down to three, and BM Builders was the most qualified and the lowest bid of the entities we selected. So we have made a lot of progress, and what I'm going to do now is turn over to Laura Mannon from Miller Hayashi. This is going to be a high-level overview of our presentation because we're going to give a more detailed one next week, and we know you guys have a busy committee schedule today. So, but happy to show you where we're at on the project. There you go. What was that? I think you're going to talk about that one.
Okay. As a reminder of the policy goals that the project was founded on, it starts with recognizing that the location where Public Works is now is not a resilient facility. It's in a building that's past the end of its useful life, and it's in a place that's prone to flooding. So in the public safety plan, relocating that Public Works shops as part of that public safety plan, I think recognizing all the way back from 2008. So Minkler Shops doesn't accommodate the program, and this project would work to maximize the operational effectiveness of Public Works.
And one thing is we moved into Fleet and Facilities, of course, in 2021 or 2022, and on November 1st, we took possession of the UPS building this year as part of our agreement in 2018 when we purchased the property that we would defer ownership until November 1st. The council gave us the permission to extend the tenant, so we're getting about $65,000 a month in rent from that existing tenant, and so that's just a quick update of where we're at with the property acquisition.
So council approval process related to design and construction schedules. Here we are November 2023. We'll be reporting to you progress updates and within a month the cost estimate update. So after that we could roll into design development. We'll start getting more detailed into the design, and then we would report back in the fall of 2024. At that time we would be looking for approval to move towards construction documents and construction. Construction on site can start in May of 2025. That is when the tenant's lease will expire. The property would be vacant, and VMB could start activities on site at that time. That construction duration would lead into completing the project by the end of 2026. Quick introduction. You heard from Jerry here. Do you want to add anything, Jerry?
Just really super glad to be here and so much looking forward to doing more work with you guys.
The project goals for this project really center around these four themes: safety, efficiency, functionality, and being forward-looking. So this is a chance to consolidate all of the Public Works functions into one site to provide a safe environment that really reflects the department's values. be a resilient facility and minimize ongoing operations, maintenance of the facilities, and be stewards of the environment, in particular along the shoreline where restoration is proposed along the Duwamish River. We have been reaching out and engaging with public works stakeholders throughout schematic design. We've met with small groups to talk about specifically, really down to the specifics about their workflows and how they move around the site. And we've also had larger group meetings where everyone in the entire department has been given a chance to voice their opinions and share what the direction they think the project should go. The proposed campus plan shown here, you can see the Fleet and Facilities building is the building shown in yellow on the left. The red building is the proposed maintenance and engineering building. That would be a three-story, 35,000 square foot building housing shops, support spaces like locker rooms, drying rooms. It would have the public-facing portion of the campus, and then it would include office spaces for engineering as well as street, sewer, water utilities. The east side of that building, The east side of the building is the public-facing civic presence. There's a separate visitor entrance driveway so that staff and visitors can be accommodated separate from the truck traffic. The west side of that building opens up onto a shared space that could be the heart of the campus and accommodate gathering for those that are in the Fleet and Facilities building as well as the M&E building to gather on campus in an outdoor covered space. The north side of that building faces out to the yard and has all the functions that really need quick access to the yard space. And then the south side of that building opens up onto the Duwamish River. So we've thought a lot about how does the appearance and scale of the building relate to those surroundings and be respectful of the scale and the river, the river's edge. The other miscellaneous things shown in blue are all of the functions that Public Works needs on campus. So that includes a large tool storage building that is both enclosed and covered storage. There's the salt, sand, and gravel storage, spoils, decant, et cetera, many different functions. And they're laid out as they are shown here, both in working with the existing constraints on site, as well as primarily safety and functionality. At the bottom of the page, you see this wedge of space that's identified as shoreline restoration, and it will, when completed, link up the Duwamish Gardens restoration with Chinook Wind. And if you look at it, it's not a long distance that's there, but really every inch of space along the shoreline really does make a difference for the salmon and for the other species that inhabit that environment. So this is a really, could be a really exemplary project in restoring the shoreline there. Another look at the same information, but just to give you more of a rendered view, you can get a sense of the spaces between the buildings from this image. And there was a lot of enthusiasm from the engineers who work on pollution prevention that there's opportunity for the meeting room that's on level one to house environmental education and outreach, and to have that education program include a walk down the trails that are constructed along the shoreline. So it could be a really unique aspect to the building, along with providing a really safe and efficient design that focuses on public works functions. These site sections give you a bit of scale and flavor for what the different types of structures are like. The top right, you're seeing a cut through of the M&E building in terms of scale relative to people standing outside and what could be a really nice covered outdoor space. The bottom drawing shows the F&F building at the left, and covered parking, driveways, salt, sand storage, or driveways. There's lots of space for trucks on this campus. Thinking about the edges of the site and security. So the site perimeter needs to be high security, proposing fence, examples of the type of fence that's proposed, much more high security than just a typical chain link fence, but still keeping in having a nice appearance at the same time. And then just how balancing really the edges of the site in relationship to the presence. This is a chance for the city to have a municipal presence in that area of Tukwila. And some places want to be screened with vegetation to provide a softer edge, and some that really just relate to the industrial character of that neighborhood. And lastly, our landscape architects at Herrera will be proposing a variety of plantings, really to respect the fact that low maintenance is a top priority, and know that there are native plants that can serve to function, make the site low maintenance. Take you through the floor plan. So we're looking at the proposed maintenance and engineering building on level one. This first floor is really driven by function. So at the right-hand side, that's the front. So it'd be the visitor entrance for anyone coming from the public. There's a meeting room adjacent to that entrance and reception, and kind of limited amount of space. You can see there's a door there because it's a secure facility. So we've thought a lot about access control and how to be welcoming, but also create a secure building. So beyond that door is everything that relates to public works. So there's the signal and signal shop and sign storage. There's drying rooms and decon where they can spray everything down with water, locker rooms, fitness, and kitchen that rolls out to the west to open up onto the site. The vertical circulation is along the northwest and northeast corners so that you can walk in from the yard and go straight upstairs. And then levels two and three have office spaces. At the core of the building are, we've thought a lot about daylight and views to create an inviting office environment. So for those that are in and out a lot, they may be outside during the day, but those that work from the office, they have access to daylight throughout the day. And you can see at the bottom of the page, the building steps back. So that does a few things. It makes the scale of the building feel smaller and broken down from the side that faces the river. It also allows for sun shading so that the open spaces that are inside of that wall will have very minimal glare. The curtains can stay open all day and you have really nice daylight to be able to work behind those spaces. Having the overhang also reduces the peak cooling load for the HVAC system. So that means you can lower the first cost of that system to not to have the smallest unit that functions, but then also makes it energy efficient for ongoing operational costs. And then it also has the added amenity of outdoor covered spaces that are directly adjacent to offices where you can walk outside maybe with your laptop and be able to work on a nice outdoor covered deck. Level three is organized in a similar fashion. We're being very efficient with the shape of the building in terms of structural system and layout. It's a very efficient layout. And again, on level three, there's a open offices and there's training room. So that's a larger gathering space that the department could have a larger department-wide training session. And some preliminary graphics of what the exterior might start to look like. At the top right is the side that would face the visitor parking lot. It would have the most kind of civic front with a large storefront entrance, a sign, a covered area, maybe some wood accents. But primarily the overall building would be proposed with concrete masonry units for durability at the ground level where the public works, really durable surfaces need to be. Combination of metal and glass for windows. And then on the overhang side that you see at the top left, the side that faces the river would be the side to maybe do something more unique with readily available materials, but in a unique color that would start to give this look of a building along the river, something that really takes respect and thinks about what that side of the building should look like from that view. The bottom left is the side that faces the work yard, so it's more utilitarian and maybe a more simple facade that's elegant and just in its proportioning, but is more simplified in terms of materials. And the bottom right, you're seeing the west side that would, if you're looking at the building from that direction, the river would be to your right and the Chinook wind mitigation would be behind you.
So just one thing, I'm going to have Jerry speak, but as part of our public safety plan, which this is a public safety plan project, so the Justice Center and the fire stations, we had goals for minority business hires, apprenticeship, as well as local hires. And so I wanted to let Jerry speak about our success rate at the Justice Center.
Thank you, Brandon. So these are the goals that we were able to establish on the Tupelo Justice Center. And we did a lot of this by really making sure that we're doing job fairs. We're also attending local organizations in terms of really presenting the job and really advertising it out there, as well as getting involved with NAWIC, ANU, and PACE to really get a lot of the apprentices to participate in the project. We have Rachel Pease, who's really part of our team now in-house. I'll be working closely with her and Michelle to make sure that we exceed these goals. on the engineering building.
One of the things about the local hire is that we had a very small, for the Justice Center and the fire station, we had a very, we used a very small number of zip codes. So like you see Tukwila, we had 8 local hires. If we were Seattle, we probably had a lot more because we have a larger area to pull from. So one of the questions we might ask the counselors, do we want to expand the local hire to include a few more zip codes in which people who might have, you know, within that, the Tukwila area, so.
Sorry for the tardy list. My name is Justine Kim, and I'm the project manager, consultant project manager working for the City of Tukwila. I would like to just give a heads up to what's coming up in the next year, that we will be looking at some difficult choices in regards to a lot of equipment that used to be on time, in time for construction and so forth, after the COVID period has grown quite a bit in the lead time for ordering. So typically you wouldn't order these equipment until the construction starts. But nowadays, CLC light equipment, transformer, for example, we just had a very preliminary meeting with the staff members out of the site, and they said, would you like to order the transformer now? Because it has 18 months to 2 years of lead time. So now that we have BM Builders on board to try to figure out when we need those equipment, the larger size equipment, like the generators or secure panels and so forth, we're going to be figuring it out together and then bringing those decisions in a timely manner so that we will figure out how to trigger in the order so that when we start construction, we'll have the equipment delivered in time. Just wanted to keep give
people a heads up on what's coming up. Thank you, and that concludes the presentation on behalf.
Thank you. Councilmember
Kruler. Yeah, first of all, I'd love to get a copy of the PowerPoint because it is going up. And in future, maybe just a little ahead of these, and we can look through it a little bit before presentation.
It get into 2 o'clock today, so yeah, it's going to be in the packet for the council meeting,
yeah,
for sure.
It helps us prepare better for the meeting. Question marks I have are, I'm certainly no building designer, but it seems like it's not a very big space that you have on the first level for public. But on third level, there's a ginormous space for training. It seems like you'd almost want to reverse that so that people can use it for whatever you think community is going to be using it for in a larger level. I don't know. And then I'm just going to let you guide us through where are the showers and the things, all the things that were imperative that they don't really have in Minkler that are here now. I think I see them, but why you place them where they are is my question. That was two.
Sure. We'll start with walking you through, and then I'll try to answer the question about why the meeting spaces are arranged that way. So first, if you're thinking of it from the crew's perspective, they're often going to be coming from these two doors at the north side. They may have parked a fleet vehicle in the yard, and then they're walking in this direction. So they would, if they're have really messy gear, they would actually come through this door first into this decon area. There's a restroom here so that they can conveniently come in with dirty gear, use a restroom, and go back out without totally getting all cleaned up. Decon is a place you can hang things up and spray them down. It's like a wet area. And then the drying room is like a wet to dry area. So this has a flooring that is very water resistant. It has open lockers. They're metal lockers where air can be pulled through. And it has places for boot dryers. So it's taking off that gear, getting it clean, and then leaving it there to dry. And then if you need to change after that, the locker rooms are directly across the hall. So women's entrance is here and men's entrance is there. Upon entering the locker room, you go through the toilet and sink area into a changing area. So all those little boxes are the lockers that would be more enclosed, like a private locker closes and locks for an individual. And then those changing areas roll into shower areas that are along the south edge of the building.
Okay.
So those X's are each shower.
Just before we move on from that, up at our fire halls, we made it so that things could convert more and more women if we started being closer and closer to our goals on gender equity in those positions. Is the same situation set up here?
Yes. So this locker room has actually 2 times the capacity for lockers than the master plan anticipated. So if you know, if the cost consideration comes into play, you may only choose to install the lockers that you know are necessary at this point with a small amount of future growth. But we found then looking at the other spaces that needed to be built on level one, there wasn't really like a what you might call a sacrificial space, like a storage room that you could take over later. So our proposal is that it's the most efficient to actually build the room to that larger capacity now, so the HVAC system, the lighting is all there. And then if you need to expand the amount of lockers that you actually have that pretty well built in, and it's just buying the lockers and expanding it that way.
Within that drawing room area. Is that what you're saying?
Essentially this, if you can see the mouse right here, this women's locker room, that's sized to accommodate more than the minimum that was provided in the projection at the master plan level.
What's the number?
So there was asked for 16 in the master plan, and this has a enough space for about 32.
And so for the meantime, it could just serve as storage. If we would have some lockers, and then it could serve as storage, and then if we expanded out, needed to expand out, we'd have the room.
Got it. And then so the other question was 4-3 versus 4-1. It's an abundant training area, but like a pretty minuscule meeting area.
Yeah, so the large training room is sized to accommodate the whole department training. And so the size of that footprint of that room, if you try to put it into just level one, it displaces a lot of other essential program from level one. So at that point, the choice is really level two or three. And it was trying to think about what would you prioritize on level two versus on level three. And when you put a large space like that in a building, you have to create a longer span structure to go across and create column-free space. And it's a lot more cost-effective to do that on the third floor because all you're supporting is the roof, and there's a lot less load on the roof than there would be on a floor level. So it's efficient, more efficient from a structural standpoint. And in talking with the various other departments and kind of strategizing where people would sit within the building, level two also came at a premium because it's closer to exiting. So the use of that large training room by the public is a lot lower frequency than those day-to-day, you know, moving in and out from level two. So that's how it ended up being prioritized that way.
Okay, and we just have all these mechanical rooms and stuff in place, because if I just kind of do a back and forth, there's really, the space is there, at least for two rows of it. But you're going to have all the electrical and mechanical rooms there.
Yeah, you really want your electrical room on ground floor from a code standpoint. Mechanical room as well, if you think about things like water heaters and stuff that you're eventually may need to move in and out. So it's an efficient way to do it. And in moving up in the buildings through level two, there's still a control point so that if that meeting room is used by the public, there'll be a nice inviting stair that you can go up. There's an elevator, and then there is a point of control at both levels so that that kind of east end of the building is public, but then the rest of the building is secured.
Okay, and last question is for Brandon. You said there's a new cost estimate.
We've always anticipated every time we go through each step to provide you a new, when I say new, an updated cost estimate. So we gave you one at a very early one when we in the spring. Now we're going to be at 30% design. So in December, we're going to present you a revised cost estimate. I don't know anything about that yet. Like we've started.
You acted like it was all announced.
No, where is it? We've been very every milestone when we get to one of these big milestones there will be a cost estimate provided. So as John Palowitz says, until you break ground, you don't really have your cost estimate. So
I'm on board. The cost estimate that we've been working with so far has been a professional cost estimator numbers, but we're going to have real market feedback from the contractor. So that'll be more real than
we're not expecting to go down.
Well, it depends.
Okay.
Depends on the scope, because there's a lot of decisions to be made as far as, you know, do you want this facility to be essential, like the fire stations and police, or this structure. And there's a lot of decision points that we will be presenting, lots of numbers.
I will say as part of our interviews, when we interviewed, one of the things that was, there was a good side, but we were hearing that some of the costs and the cost increases were actually kind of somewhat stabilizing, right?
Yes. Yeah. So it's much better than 2 years ago when escalation was above 10% per year. So we're hoping that this is a good place to start planning a project.
Okay, and the last question is the angle of the building change. It used to be parallel with the river. Explanations.
Yeah, it's to, here, I'll go back to that slide so everyone can see. It's to orient the driveways and really tie everything together on campus. So when this building, when you think about this building and the view corridor and the route of driving along here, so it's oriented that way so that it relates to these other buildings that are paralleling the F&S building. And it allowed for this space to be, it pulls the building a little bit away from Chinook Wind, and it kind of gives it a exterior space so that the building feels, although it's not that much farther away at one end, it's a lot farther away at the north end. Just really thinking about how to relate to the river a lot.
Councilmember Abdi.
Yeah, cool question. I have a few quick questions. Thanks for the presentation. One of them is this proposed campus plan. Can you kind of go a little bit into like parking?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times, you know, from my experience being in the council, I've learned how hectic it is to do parking in terms of like, you know, when you're doing these like campus updates or like construction of some kind. So let's get inside on that.
Sure. Yes. So there are parking figures that were established in the master plan, and they studied the amount of vehicles, the fleet vehicles and the staff vehicles, and then increased by 30%. So there's some growth built into the quantities that are provided. And when you see the parking spaces, I'll zoom in for a minute. Parking spaces that are highlighted in the lighter blue are open parking. So that's just a typical parking lot type parking. But the darker is covered. And the fleet being covered, it allows for a lot of the vehicles to last a lot longer. So it reduces the amount of maintenance and extends the lifespan for the fleet vehicles to have them covered. So these are large spaces over here. These are the largest. They're 15 by 45. So there's only 4 covered spaces of that scale. And then they go down in size from that. So there's 10 by 30 spaces flanking that large one. And then there's 9 by 20s. So they're scaled to the size of the vehicle. And they're distributed throughout the site, both because you want to provide proximity between the tool storage building and the M&E building. That's a high frequency route. And they're organized in a way that can also provide a pedestrian network. So that hatched area, kind of looks gray on the screen up there, is thinking about where people would walk. So minimizing, making really high visible places to cross. So big traffic is coming through. You want to make people visible so that the truck drivers can really see someone that's trying to walk across the campus, and make it predictable so that they know to slow down and to look at certain places. It's extra awareness from a safety standpoint. So the area at the north, you may recall, is an easement. We didn't go into detail today on the easements. There are a lot of easements on these parcels. And this is actually in the Seattle City Light easement. So this zone of fleet parking is open. It's not covered because there are high voltage power lines above. So nothing permanent can be built there, but it can be utilized for parking. That's why those are concentrated in that area.
Cool. And then the staff, I think I see on the bottom, so visitor staff parking. So it's not just for like people wanting to, you know, be visitors, but like the staff, they would utilize these spaces as well.
Yes. So there would be accessible parking near the entrance, and then there would be a group of parking spaces that were open that would be available for extra staff parking. And then there's space around here that can also be for staff parking. So it would be a mixture of staff and visitors utilizing this parking lot that is at the east entrance of the building.
Thank you so much for that. The other one, I was going to ask you if we can go look at level 2.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what page it is. It says on your guys.
It's okay.
It says page 4.
Level 2.
Yeah, level 2, yeah. So I was going to ask about the recovery room. If you could talk a little bit more about the tracker server room and the recovery room.
Sure. So recovery room is a space for sleeping. If you're on a 24/7 shift and say, for example, if there's like a snow event and it's ongoing. And so rather than leave and go home, people may need to stay so they can sleep and recover. And it's organized like this so that there's privacy. You could fit 2 or potentially 4 if people were needing to share people sleeping. And it has this, what looks like a vestibule for sound isolation, so that when there's busy, if they're trying to sleep during the day, it's busy and louder in the hallway, there's 2 doors into the room, and that's an efficient way to make acoustical separation so that it's not hard to sleep in an off hours. And then you asked also about these rooms over here. So traffic server room is a space that can house the computer servers that control the traffic signals so that data that comes into the building, it would be housed in that room. And then these other small spaces, this one is labeled for custodian. That would be like a mop sink for building maintenance. And then IDS is building's data system. Not, it would be separate from those servers I just mentioned. That would just be a space where all the data systems for this self-contained building would patch together.
And Councilmember, there's a recovery room. So when we've had snow events in the past or storm events in the past, sometimes we've had to get hotel rooms for our crews. So this would be one thing where we could have the crews stay on site versus having to secure a hotel room where sometimes we might not be able to, or they have to be off site and then come back to their equipment.
That's great. That's not something that when we're, you know, we're going, you know, you would come back to us and, you know, give us like the process. That's something I thought about, you know, in terms of the recovery room, you know. So that's cool. And then the RR, what is that again? What is the recovery room?
Those are the restrooms. So there's two individual, not gendered restrooms on this level. You'll see on level 3, there's a larger restroom that relates to that big training room. And then on level 1, there's lots of restrooms because the locker rooms are there. So if you work on level 2 and you don't want to go to another floor, so there's more convenience there.
I would have never thought that was an abbreviation of restroom. That was cool. Yeah, I would have never figured that. In terms of next steps, love to, you know, I know we're trying to talk a little bit about it, you know, in terms of, you know, just one discussion only. But what are the goals in terms of after this meeting?
So there's going to be, we're proposing to brief the whole council next week with an update. And then we'll come back to the council in mid-December, probably your last meeting of the year with the cost estimates at the schematic design stage.
Okay. Yeah, because they did say in November that you guys would something about coming back or making a decision before the end of the year.
Yeah. So just we're going to check in with you on the schematic design in mid-December. So this is the overall design cost estimates we just got BN on, and so they're working on the cost estimates with our architecting project team now.
Yeah. How long? We see like the end goal of this taking in terms of timeline, like when you can have all this complete.
Can you go back to the timeline?
Mm-hmm. The overall timeline.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you. And let me so the fall of next year is when we would anticipate coming back with getting authorization to do construction documents. And then we would start with the idea of starting construction May 1st of 2025.
Okay, awesome. Appreciate it. That's all my questions, Chair. Thank you.
All right. What changed between this drawing and the one that was initially posted? I noticed there's some things missing as far as the campus offered amenities.
I think that nothing changed between the packet, what you had in front of you.
Yeah, the overall drawing. I don't, where's that police impound thing?
The police impound is still here.
So I didn't see it marked.
So police impound is here. You can see where the mouse is going.
All right.
That's there. And then the evidence storage garages would be here.
Okay.
Yeah. So all the program elements are still incorporated.
Okay. And police evidence is there already. It's part of phase 1. So it's already been completed.
Okay. And then on, I'm going to be quick because we have a lot of things, but level 3, the bottom right corner, is that like a lunchroom or something? There's a bunch of symbols there. I'm imagining those are tables.
Yes. So the bottom right, that big room that's shaded in green, that would be the training room. Okay. And that could be a multi-purpose room. It could serve as a backup EOC space. It could serve actually as two smaller training rooms. It could just be a meeting room if the other meeting rooms in the building are taken.
And it also could be used for like crews if they need to rest. And
yeah.
So we're not stuck with those two rooms there. The two rooms on level 2, the recovery rooms, they have locks on the doors.
Yeah, the recovery rooms would have the privacy lock. Yep.
Okay, perfect. And then I noticed that the locker room, the main locker room, any thought to putting a partition for men and women there? The reason for that is for a worker on a daily, they probably want to get undressed before and changed into normal clothing before trudging through the entire office to get to the back locker room. So they have to actually make it into the main corridor or go bypass it completely. So as far as exposure for the city and privacy. Is there thoughts to making a partition where there's men and women inside?
We asked the crew about that. And the consensus amongst the crew is actually that the drying room does not need to be gendered. It's more flexible and efficient to have one large room. They don't get undressed in that room. What they're doing there is taking off their overcoat that would be wet and it would hang. So they wouldn't actually be taking off their...
They have two lockers then, essentially.
Yes, everyone has two lockers. They have the gear locker and then a personal locker room locker.
Okay. All right. I'm going to end it there. We got to get to the next one. But appreciate you letting us know that.
And just point of order, because it was said that this discussion only, but we're being asked before...
I've been finished.
Okay.
Can I finish?
Sure. Well, I'll just point of order is a thing you get to do where you interrupt the process to check the process. So thank you for allowing that.
Okay. So is there a consensus before this to the 11-13 committee of the whole meeting?
Yes, sir.
Perfect. Going to item B, if you got three, next word. Department of Ecology 2023-25 biannual stormwater capacity grant. Ms. DeBoer, you doing the briefing. After that, it would be... The idea would be to be forwarded to the 11-13 special consent agenda. So please proceed.
Good evening. I'm Katrine, the grant analyst for Public Works. And on the screen today is Russell. And so I'll invite him to describe a little bit more about the work he does with this money. And so the committee is being asked to accept a Department of Ecology grant for the 2023-2025 biennium. And this will fund NPDES permit activities, and this is in the amount of $130,000 spread across those 2 years, and consider this as the consent agenda on the November 13th meeting. So we applied for this back in September, and it's a non-competitive grant, so we meet the qualifications, and we submitted the application, and we're awarded it, and we've gotten this for the past couple of years. And Russell is very familiar with the project eligibility, so I'll let him describe what he's been doing with this team.
Thanks, Katrine. And I'm sure everybody's familiar with NPDES, or the Discharge Elimination System with Ecology. This grant is being awarded to us to help us in implementation of all aspects of the permit, including labor. And we can actually pay for things with this that we've already done. So it's a very flexible grant. It's one of the few that's like that. We're trying to increase our school-age children outreach. So we've been buying some awards and things for schools. We're engaging with the school teachers to teach an environmental education package around water and water quality and the Duwamish River, especially the Superfund site. The discharge elimination system affects all divisions of the city and all departments, including the fire department. And we're hoping to help everyone with increased training and increased awareness around their work ethic and work processes. So with that, is there any questions for me?
Stephanie Ruler.
Not a bit. Money in our pocket. There's no matching funds. This is part of the process that we're used to. Thank you for all the work that led up to getting this money.
Councilmember Abdi.
Yeah, no questions. This is great for RC. Great work done on the team. So, yeah, it's great.
I have one question. What percent of the money used is for the identification and removal of illicit stormwater discharges and equipment costs?
So there's not really an earmarked percentage in there. We can use that for illicit discharges. Of course, the entire discharge elimination program is to find sources of pollution to the river, and a big part of that is our illicit discharge program. We have two inspectors currently that circle the city for a number of reasons. Private drainage inspection and other things take them to all areas of the city. And during those visits, they're also looking for operations or activities that cause pollution, and they are trained to stop and discuss that and provide technical assistance with those dischargers and get that stopped immediately.
Would you say that the majority of the money, what would you say the majority of the money is spent on? of this 130,000?
Yeah, so in the past, it's really been kind of an even split between labor and programmatic efforts. So cleaning up catch basins, cleaning up sources of pollution is probably the largest percentage, but it's really an even split. We have used the money in the past to pay for contractors to provide us programmatic development and project development to provide additional water quality within the stormwater system. So it's hard to put a number on that because it is so variable year after year. We are finding less and less people discharging pollution, so we're able to spend more and more of this in programmatic efforts like education and outreach, and especially education to school-age children. So, the whole discharge elimination system program has the goal of teaching everyone how to work and live without polluting water bodies. So the effort eventually is going to lead to 100% programmatic efforts, where today we're spending probably close to 60% on pollution abatement.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Nothing.
Do I get approval from this for the to forward this to the 11-13 special consent agenda? Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it looks like you have three. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good job.
That brings us to item C, which is the 35th Avenue South Street Vacation Amendment Resolution Setting Public Hearing. Mr. Lerner, with the idea of forwarding this to the 11-13 Committee of the Whole and 12-4 public hearing, please.
Yes, good evening, Council. I'm going to take this one. Okay. So what we have in front of you is a resolution. We're asking you to approve a resolution and set a public hearing date on December 4th to amend Ordinance 1978. Ordinance 1978 is vacating 35th Avenue South. So to give you a background, October of 2001, City Council approved Ordinance 1978. It's vacating portion of 35th Avenue South, adjacent to Sabi Data Center. And then this vacation included a condition that a vacated portion of that should remain open to pedestrian traffic. And then in October 2005, Council subsequently adopted Ordinance 2101, vacating a portion of 124th Street. As a result, the vacated portion of 35th Avenue South does not connect to any other facility. So as you can see, the drawing, the picture that is clearly showing the two segments that don't, the streets that are vacated, make 35th Street doesn't lead to anywhere as far as pedestrian access. In addition to that, there were several incidents reported by Sabi Corporation to our police department that were also attached to this item here that shows multiple events have happened, incidents have happened where vehicles have been prowled and other minor and major incidents that are all part of this report. So in 2021, Sabi Corporation came to DCD, our planning department, and applied for a permit to build a fence around both of these vacated streets so that it will prevent all of this theft and other things. As it was granted by DCD, the permit, and so the construction of the fence is done. So all we're doing right now is granting the ordinance, the removal of the ordinance that has the pedestrian access. So this will just make sure that the fence is placed and the easement is gone. So this doesn't lead to construction. Construction is already done. And we do have Mike Hansen, the applicant here, and staff are here to answer any questions here.
Councilmember Kruller.
The other questions and concern I had, it looks like it makes no difference when I look at this, was that the people in the homes here just below the letter A have been there for multiple generations, and that they have the same access and egress to the properties that they have before this. I think this fence line begins right where you lock up and walk through an open gate for pedestrian. it just gets sealed off. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah. There's bollards there for the fire department, and so we've coordinated with them too, but that's what people can walk through before we vacate.
Okay, so then the last question I have is, oddly enough, about the fire department. Does this make this, have you talked to the fire department about the access to the property in case something large happened here and we have to approach it from the south end of the property?
It was all purpose built around the fire, I mean, yeah.
Okay, meaning do they have some kind of block access in through there or even just seal the fence off completely?
I can't tell you exactly how it works, but they have access.
Okay, I'm satisfied. Maybe more detail by the council.
Yeah.
Totally in support of this.
Yes.
Councilmember Omdi.
Yeah, I'm totally in support of it. You know, it's not like you said, the construction is done, you know, so and to me, this sounds very supportive. So I'm totally in support as well.
Councilmember, if I could add that the amount of police act or illegal activity that we've had in all of our campuses, yeah, I know you hear it around town. It just, we couldn't stop it. And it's catalytic converters, it's punching holes in gas tanks and siphoning the gas and having hazardous cleanups, it's dumpster diving, it's car theft, it's they stole a golf cart. I mean, it's been nonstop over the last 2 years, so that is the reason that we wanted to put in the fence. And we did come to the city with both of those ordinances and explained the situation, and we got the permit. So now when it went to final permit, they got hung up on this one part of this ordinance, and so that's why we're here.
Okay. So as far as vacating, I read about what vacating is, but explain to me what that means. Does that mean that we no longer maintain that road?
Right.
It means like that the Fabi Corporation is maintaining the road as is?
We bought the property for fair market value from the city. We take all the responsibility to maintain the street.
Okay, and then if there's any utilities down in there that's related to Tukwila or surrounding, who pays for all that stuff to get maintained or dug up or that kind of thing?
That's a good question, Councilman. Normally, the process of street vacating include us reviewing all of these. So Public Works staff will look at the road. Most of the streets that are accepted for vacation, such as these one, don't lead anywhere. They just lead to dead end into one property. So there's nobody else accessing it, and there are no public utilities underneath it. And if there are any utilities, we will secure an easement and make sure that we maintain if there are public utilities. In this case, there are no public utilities. There are only sewer and stuff that serve in their property, so it's all their responsibility.
There are some easements that run up. But those are all covered in the ordinance.
Okay, and then as far as, is it Camara? That's that building next to it. Looks like they exit on 124. Are they able to exit? I noticed they may have a second one. I haven't driven out there recently.
Yeah, the gate for that is actually west of that entrance.
East Marginal Way, perhaps?
They can get out of East Marginal Way, and they can get out on the street. You're talking about these two buildings?
Yeah, I know. I think they'll probably come out of here.
The gate is down here, so they can come out here, and they can come out here.
So is there going to be, as far as when somebody cruises up to 124th and East Marginal Way, what is there, a security shack there with a gate?
Not until you get down to here.
Okay, so folks out of this Camara can get in and out as they need. Folks can enter as they need. And then what's the solution as far as Google? I'm doing directions. It won't take us down there, right? It won't show the road anymore, will it not?
Well, it does, but you can, you know, come up to the guard shack and hit the intercom and talk to somebody if you have business on the site.
Okay. All right. And is that all your property, including those little trailers and stuff in the middle of the shippers?
Yeah.
They have no problems? No one has problems?
No, everybody was highly supportive.
Okay. All right.
So the ask here, Councilmember, is you're being asked to consider this item at the number 13 Committee of the Whole, set a subsequent public hearing December 4th. They'll give ample time to give a notice for the public hearing and all that.
Okay. Do we have consensus? Yes. Yes. All right. Sounds good.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. That brings us to item D, which is the transportation element of the comprehensive plan supplemental agreement. After her talk, we'll move forward this to the 11-13 special consent agenda, please.
Okay, evening. So you all are aware, I'm sure, that we're in the process of updating our transportation element. I've come before you a couple months ago and kind of briefed you on where we were at. And at the time when we developed the contract with Fair and Peers, we only had $400,000 in the budget. We had $200,000 additional, but it accidentally didn't get carried over. And so we did lose some funding that was necessary for this body of work. And so we scoped out and we gave a notice to proceed for basically what we're calling phase one of the work, which is analyzing the existing conditions, starting really extensive public outreach, and just starting the work moving towards analyzing the future conditions. And that's kind of where we're at today. And so what is before you this evening is that next phase. It's going to continue public outreach. It's going to continue analyzing our needs for the future. It's going to allow us to run a couple of alternatives as far as land use goes, which will help support other elements within the comprehensive plan. The item that is after this that has now been pulled is for the local road safety plan, and we had to pull that. They came in last minute, literally this afternoon, asking for some modifications to the contract language. So as soon as I get that approved to the legal, we'll bring that forward. But the findings from that local road safety plan will be rolled into the comprehensive plan, and then ultimately we'll be presenting to the Planning Commission and then to the Council a comprehensive look at transportation needs for the next 20 years for both capacity as well as safety. It's going to include transit. It's going to include non-motorized. So it's going to be allowing us to finish the work that we've already got started. So we all know we've had some pretty high cost of living that had come through recently. And so the dollar amount has gone up from what we had anticipated, I think, earlier this year when we brought something forward to you, where I was estimating about $300,000. So it's about $350,000 now that we need. Griffin has promised me that the money is available in our public works budget, and that's what we have before you. Yeah, I've been talking to him for months about, I'm going to need this money. And finally, we got it all together, and he said, yeah, we can do it. So that is kind of just a quick summary of what it is that this body of work is going to be giving us. We're still hopefully on track to bringing this forward for possible council adoption, maybe June of next year. It's getting a little tight at this point. I'm feeling a little pressured, but that's what we are here for. And any questions, I'm here to answer them.
That's no problem.
So sort this out, I'm looking on page 92 and 17 and 8. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at 22 expenses, 23 expenses. You're just asking us to backfill the 23 expenses?
Yes.
It's not forward looking.
Yes.
So you spent the money, you need a little more to finish up the contract.
Yes, and you are correct. I hadn't even noticed that. But we actually pushed back the start of this work because with COVID, the state requirement got pushed back, and so we didn't start the bulk of this work in 22 like we had originally anticipated when the CIP was developed, but we started the bulk of it mostly this year. We did a little bit late last year, and so these numbers will kind of shift, and yeah, bad on us for not noticing that to clarify that.
Right, so some of this will be expended in 2024.
The bulk of it will be in 2024.
Slide over here?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. I'm in support.
Councilmember Abdi.
Yeah, I'm in full support. I have two quick questions, though. You mentioned just earlier while you were talking about when you first started explaining a little bit, you mentioned that there was $200,000 accidentally that they get carried over.
Yeah.
Can you please elaborate a little bit more on that?
Originally, we thought we were going to be starting this work, I believe, in 2019. And so it was included in the CIP that was current at that point. And it was a 2 years CIP. And so I believe it was 2019 to 2020 CIP. Well, obviously we didn't get started. We were able to roll over the way it was set up was $200,000, I think, in 2019 and $400,000 in 2020. When we rolled things over into the next CIP, that $200,000 that was in one of the earlier years, and I could be wrong, but it's effectively what happened. It just simply got missed. I said, hey, we got to protect this. It just accidentally got missed. And so it was never completely rolled over. And that's what happened. It wasn't like it was expended anywhere. It's just that, oops, it didn't completely roll over like we anticipated.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's a big accidental.
It was a complete oversight. And
yeah. Now I appreciate you elaborating a little more on that. Mm-hmm. And also, you said, you talked to Griffin about wanting, like, you know, what you thought was about 300,000. Obviously, especially more higher.
Yeah.
But on here, so it's 307,000.
Yeah. big round numbers here for you.
Sorry, I'm sorry to be a little too technical. Yeah. Like, you're about
I may be the engineer, but sometimes I get kind of round numbers.
Yeah, you're
round,
yeah.
But yeah.
That was actually
yeah.
Being a little too technical on that.
No, you are absolutely correct. Yeah. It's for that 367.
Yeah.
Oh, got these glasses, $190. So, you know, went up about an additional 50-ish
K. 50-ish K, got it. Yeah, perfect. But outside of that, I think I'm going to push the point. I'm intrigued to see what that 20-year scope looks like.
Me too.
Thank you. That's it,
Chair. All right. Well, do we have consensus? I don't have questions. I understand it's just a, you know, inflation. Do we have any other questions?
No, thank you.
Okay. Are we in consensus with forwarding us to the 11-13 special consent agenda?
Yes.
Okay. Perfect. You have three. If an E there, he brings up to the resolution to surplus the equipment for 2023 by Mr. Gray. This is the highlight of our meeting. We should talk about equipment and yard sale actions. What the idea of forwarding this to the 11-13 special consent agenda? Take it away.
Thank you, council members. And every day with you is a highlight, Mr. Tosh. So tonight before before you, we have the resolution authorizing the sale of surplus equipment no longer needed by the city. Each year, the police department identifies equipment that has outlived its useful life and is prepared for the auction process. This year, Fleet and our external partners or internal partners identified 35 pieces of equipment that have outlived their surplus life. They're no longer needed or required and have been replaced by the city. Most of these items still operate, but in some cases require extensive repairs, they're no longer used, or they're too costly to repair. The fiscal impact is all pieces of equipment are fully depreciated and are now currently valued at $52,240. Selling the equipment at auction is as is condition and is now the more practical solution for disposal. A recommendation is for Public Works is requesting for council to approve the resolution declaring 35 pieces of equipment, an estimated value of $50,000 as surplus, and authorize the sale and to consider in this item as the November 13th, 2023 special consent agenda.
So the number changed from value from 42 to 52?
Yes, that is true.
Okay, I just making sure. All right.
We're having an amendment that we're going to have at the next. Mr. Rosen, do you want to speak to that?
Sure, of course. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Real quick. Yes, we had to amend the surplus resolution. Our Foster Golf Course Fund for 411 Fund had to surplus two items. We were looking to do it as a separate surplus resolution. Then we realized it would be a little more efficient for our end of year processes to real quickly tack on to Public Works' resolution. So I thank them for that. The two items that we've tacked on are the maple, the last remaining maple tree slabs from the tree that fell on Foster Golf Links back in 2021, if I remember correctly, and an old John Deere Gator utility cart that's fully utilized through its service life. So just two items we had to tack on real quick. And thank you for your understanding. Happy to answer any questions to that.
Councilmember Pearl.
So all the let's start with the vehicle fleet. So just half their life cycle, 5 years or whatever it is, or mileage that you have set?
Yes, past their useful life.
Okay.
Or the repairs are too extensive.
Yeah, it's kind of like our computers. We kind of have keep it for 25 years. We keep it for X number of years. Or having some real mechanical issues, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So now I look at a whole bunch of trailers. Are we saying these are broken or are they under some kind of a life cycle as well?
No, they're on a life cycle as well.
Okay. So they function, but we just rotate them and go get new ones?
If it is determined that they're needed, sometimes they're no longer needed. So we replace them.
So you just aren't using them, like the motorcycle ones.
Yeah.
Okay. And then our
any of these just flat out broken and we're replacing them? I'm just trying to figure out what. Are we getting a smaller amount? Because, like, are we getting rid of all these? And, like, say you had 52. Are we replacing them with, like, 32 items? Are they all getting replaced? Or are they? Or is there a portion of them that we know we just don't?
Yeah, typically what happens is it's a one-in, one-out basis. However, if we identify that this is absolutely it's no longer needed, then there's no need to replace it.
Okay. And then the question on the remaining pieces of maple, I'm just trying to understand, we're going to surplus that out to the public or is somebody going to buy them?
By my understanding, Chris Kelly, our parks manager, has lined up a, I want to say it's a small carpentry firm or something that showed interest in the sale. But we've found a concerned or a interested buyer who's already confirmed their interest to buy, and therefore we're moving to sell.
So it never was made public. So A, people like the Historical Society couldn't take a look at purchasing some of that. B, other members of the public who may like be in the family that sold the property that stood on, or see people who've lived here for multiple generations might consider it of value to them. And that's never going to be offered up to them as some kind of a straight sale to somebody. Because I'm used to working with the city of Seattle who puts it out in a surplus area where it's open to everyone.
Right. I just want to make it clear. It's not us doing this. It's the parks. So the question is to
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just asking the question. Yeah. How do we... So when we go straight to a buyer without letting any of the public have access to it, it goes to what is our policy?
David. So if I can, David Klein, city administrator. Great questions, Councilmember Kruller. I have the same questions. And so let's go talk with staff before we bring this to the COW next week, making sure about how the slabs have historical significance here in Tukwila. I'd like to keep them in Tukwila. And I like the suggestions. I would add to those suggestions that we want to keep this historical artifact in Tukwila, either for the Historical Society or other. So let me work with our city staff to find out the best uses of these slabs.
And another thought is that we built a bunch of new buildings and put new slabs in there, but then there's other buildings that aren't new that might appreciate a conference table.
Yeah.
You know, or something there.
For those who don't know, these slabs were intended to be in every single building of the city. And so that was the purpose, is to connect 150 years of Tukwila history for the next 150 years of
right. And
all our buildings.
So I just, and that kind of tree doesn't come along every day. I just rather, if we're going to, I just rather the public had a shot at it if they needed it. Or the public, that is, the city, using it.
Yeah.
Other than that, this is great. So I don't know what we're approving in the ordinance that we're going to sell it. Will it be modified by the next meeting, David?
Yeah.
Okay.
Councilman Robby.
Yeah, to me, it sounds pretty straightforward. I have no question. I'm supporting.
Well, it's going to auction this stuff. So a lot of these vehicles, every biennium we do a vehicle replacement plan with the council. You guys are you're already aware of the vehicles that are there. They're being surplus. So what we do is, instead of holding on to the vehicles to the end of the year, once they're ready to be surplus, once we have a new vehicle in, we get it out because we don't have the storage.
So what happens to the vehicles? I'm going to ask you all these lists of vehicles, right? You're not going to just dump them. You're going to sell them, right?
Exactly. So we have a place called Get a Deal. It's an online auction. So that is where all the vehicles go to.
Cody, you want to say David's item is not going to the auction, right? It's separate.
Yes, the parks department has a different process than our typical process that we do here.
Okay, so for the record, what does the parks do? Potentially, we're not probably going to part with that wood slab. We're not selling wood here. But the other item you were talking about, what's happening with that? How do you part with that?
The usual method of disposal has been trade-in, usually directly back to the dealer. As Mr. Gray said before, usually via a one-in, one-out procedure. But in that case, the trade-in value that was offered was, I believe, a couple hundred to $1,000 below what we were able to get on open market sale. So once again, direct sale in that case.
Okay. And then again, because I know there's folks eyeballing, I saw the mayor's car in there. So is the mayor currently driving said vehicle listed in the picture there, or is he doing an Uber or something? What's he doing driving around? Did he get a new vehicle?
So the mayor has a one-in, one-out policy, just like the rest of us.
So, like, it's listed here. What I'm asking is he driving this one that's listed here?
No.
Did he get a replacement?
No. Yeah, he has a nice.
Okay. Yeah. So, again, it's a U-bid is where somebody who's listening to this or hears about these vehicles, they can go and mine.
Instead of bidadoo.com?
Bidadoo. Okay. Is there any other questions?
Oh, no, thank you.
Do we have consensus to forward this to the 11-13 special consent agenda?
Yes.
Perfect. Can't wait to
thank you, Dave.
Bid on that mayor's car. So if there's no miscellaneous?
No miscellaneous.
Okay, then I will conclude the meeting at 6:36 p.m. Thank you.